palms up. Let us say the Sufi invocation of Hazrat Inayat Khan. The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And allow the palms to feel as if they're being filled with precious and divine light, inspiration from that one source towards the one, the perfection of love, harmony, all the illuminated souls we invite here with us. Fill us and bless us. Take the palms and pour this beautiful, golden, illuminating light over and through the being. I want to thank those that ventured out in the snowy weather to be here with us this evening, for being here with us and sharing in this remembrance, and also our friends from afar that have joined us on Skype. But welcome everyone. And I was speaking with Pir Murshid Hidayat today, and he wanted to send his regards to everyone, his love. Of course, he's remembering today very much, and joining in union and spirit with the celebrations that have already taken place at the Dargah, of which some of us maybe have received photos of that. But it's quite a celebration and a memory of sort of the beginning of the centennial of the message coming to the West. And so it was really kind of birthed forth, a great celebration in India, sort of completing that cycle worldwide as we gather here remembering Hazrat Inayat Khan and the dedication of his life to the Sufi message that's helped us all meet each other and be here together. It's very beautiful. I'd like to share. Karima Gita and I have prepared a few things for sharing. And in a few moments, I'm going to exchange chairs and ask our music master to guide us in the instruction of the zikr. But also I wanted to share a few words of Murshid's. I thought on this occasion, when we remember the passing of our beloved Murshid from this earth, that it would be appropriate to share a teaching that he gave just a few months before his passing. And it was to a group of his intimate murids, and the title of this paper is Things to Remember. Now today, I'd like to speak to some things that you will remember after having gone from here. It is never possible to tell you in words how much devotion you may have for your murshid and how much you may not have. Nor is it possible to tell in words how much faith you may have in murshid and how much you may not have. And it is also impossible to say in words that what you may think of murshid and what you may not think. If you will not measure it with a meter and will not weigh it on a scale, so much the better it will be. I would leave to all my murids and workers their own idea about the teachings. If there's anything I have taught which has not agreed with you, you will bear with me. Maybe that one day you will understand. And if there is something that you have appreciated or understood, you must know that it belonged to you, that it was yours. Imagine that he said this. This was on September 10th, he gave this teaching to his students. In February of the next year, he left. And he goes on to say, and the last thing you will consider, your teacher with you when you are away. Murshid goes still more with you for the very reason that you are away. And therefore, you have no reason to think that you are separated or far away from Murshid. But you must feel confident that the very reason that you are away and space has divided us, that Murshid is so much more near. Mm-hmm. Isn't that beautiful? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Book. Some of you may have these. They're called, fondly referred to as the brown books versus the orange books. But these are the complete works of Pirim Murshid Hazrat Inayat Khan, and they're the original text lectures on Sufism, and they've been compiled by a murid whose name is Sharif Graham, who spends a good deal of time in the archives in France, in Suresnes. And one by one, year by year, he's bringing these teachings forward in the chronology in which they were given, noting the place, the date, and frequently the audience to who was being delivered. And so I wanted to read a little paper, because at first it may seem, why is Murray reading this on the day of Murshid's passing, and why before Zikr? But I think by the time we get to the end of this teaching of Murshid's, you'll see the connection. And this paper was given in summer school in Suresnes. It was taken in the shorthand of Sakina Bantul, and the subject is metaphysics. And further, the subject is on the centers. As there are different organs of senses, so there are the centers of inner perception. The Sufis have called the five centers of inner perception by terms: Arsh, Kursi, Lau, Kalam, Arshkul Azam. These centers denote seats of intuitive faculties. Two among these centers are great of great importance, the heart and the head. If the Sufi training differs from that of the yogis, it is in the training of both these centers together, by which the Sufi produces balance. The head without the heart shows dry intellect. Heart without head represents unbalanced condition. The balance is the use of both these faculties. The whole Sufi training is based on this principle. The centers may be likened to a space that one finds in an apple. It is akasha, an accommodation, where not only smell, touch, seeing, and hearing is perceived, but even the thought and feeling of another is perceived. The condition in the atmosphere is perceived. The pleasure and displeasure of one's fellow man is perceived. And if the sense of perception is keener, then even the past, present, and future can be perceived. When man does not perceive it by this, it does not mean that it is foreign to man's nature. It only means the soul is not wakened to that perception. The absence of such finer perception naturally causes depression and confusion. For the soul longs for a keener perception and feels confused and at times agitated owing to the lack of a fuller perception. As a person who is blind feels nervous, agitated, because the inner longing is to see. And when the organ of sight fails one, he becomes agitated. This is the cause hidden generally in many souls. Take a moment. Go back a few sentences. The centers may be likened to a space that one finds in the apple. It is akasha, an accommodation, where not only smell, touch, seeing, and hearing is perceived, but even the thought and feeling of another's pleasure and displeasure is perceived. And if the sense of perception is keener, then even the past, present, and future can be perceived. When man does not perceive it by this, it does not mean that it is foreign to man's nature. It only means the soul is not wakened to that perception. The absence of such fine perception naturally causes depression and confusion. For the soul longs for a keener perception and feels confused and at times agitated owing to the lack of a fuller perception. As a person who is blind feels nervous, agitated, because the inner longing to see. And when the organ of sight fails one, he becomes agitated. This is the cause hidden generally in many souls who feel uncomfortable. And the life we live, a life of artificiality, it works against it. We do not need to read the ancient traditions to find out the truth about it. Today, the people who live less artificial life, more simple life, a life in the nature, their intuitive faculties are more keen and they show a greater happiness. These centers become blocked by a certain food, by living by a certain materialistic life. These centers are located in such places as there are some plants in the caves of the mountains where the sun does not reach, where the air cannot touch, and it is difficult for plants to live there. And so are the centers of perception. The physical body is nourished by food, but those centers remain without any nourishment. The physical body, which is made of matter, its sustenance is matter. But the centers of perception, located in the physical body, where the nourishment can reach, which is drawn through the breath. The fine substance, which is not even visible. In the language of the mystics, it is called nur, which is light. It does not want only the food, but also breath. In other words, vibration. And that vibration is given to it by the repetition of sacred words. The sounds and vowels and the composition of the sacred words is chemical. And it is this chemistry which is called by the ancient philosophers chemia or alchemia. These centers are the akashas or domes where every sound has its re-echo. And the re-echo, once produced in this akasha, reaches all other akashas which exist within and without. Therefore, the repetition of a sacred word has not only to do with oneself and one's life, but it spreads and rises higher than we can imagine and wider than man can perceive. Verily, every action sets to movement every atom of the universe. Prior into entering the singing of the zikr, let us be mindful of a further teaching that Hazaradanayi Khan gives us. He talks about the left side of the heart, representing the heart, in fact, and the right side representing the soul. He talks about the left side representing the limited self and the right side, the soul, the unlimited self, the perfection. One could say the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty. So as we make this sweeping motion from left to right, be mindful of these words where we begin. La Elaha. And we sweep from left to right. La Elaha. There is nothing. And we touch that part of the unlimited self and we draw it back to the limited self in these motions that we make. When we say El Allahu, only God is, reminding the limited self, God, that too is God, a manifestation. And it's a beautiful motion when you think of the fact that Anaya Khan said that the zikr and this motion are all in all. All in all, he says. And this motion is the sweeping that he talks about. When we make this motion horizontally and then vertically as we come down, we are making a cross over our bodies that blesses us and protects us from every unwanted or disharmonious influence. And it's beautiful practice. It is all in all. And it's a great gift that he's given to us. And we have seen it written in his own hand, the notes and the words, La ilaha el Allahu. La ilaha el Allahu. I think that we'll say just a word about the zikr, and the phrase of the zikr is again a little bit different than we're sometimes used to pronouncing it. Murshid was very specific that he used la el el, la ilaha el Allahu, la ilaha el Allahu, I should say, and he doesn't add an extra syllable of il el Allahu there. We are accustomed to saying it in that way. But in this form, it's given very specifically. He talks about the fact that the musical formation, and I think it's beautiful to note that, comes from the tradition of raga from the East, and that this particular raga, the Bhivramya raga, is a very specific raga and has a great blessing. And if we know anything about the music of that culture, it is meant to enliven the elemental world and the guardians of all of the elements of earth, water, fire, air, ether. This is how these rags came into existence, was to invoke the rising of the sun, the setting of the moon, the zenith of the sun, and so forth. The spinning of the whole universe. And so they're an alchemy in and of itself. And those that know, and many of you I'm sure do, know that these ragas are sung very specifically. Some for the morning, some for the evening, some for midday, some only in winter, some only in spring, some only in summer, some only in autumn. But this one, and this one alone can be sung any time of day, in any season. And I think that Anaya Khan selected it because it represents that unity of all things. It's a very great blessing when we think of that and bring that into our awareness and consciousness, as, of course, there's a great blessing anyway, but to wake up to some of these things is also so beautiful to think of his attentiveness that he put towards this selection of this specific raga, with the words that come from the Persian language, not Arabic, that have this connection to the tradition of purity, Zoroastrianism, which is very connected to the elemental world again. You see, it's all connected in a beautiful way. And he gave it to us in a very specific rhythm, which also, if done in unison, can bring such amazing harmony amongst ourselves. And as he said in the teaching, one action, one atom sets the whole universe in motion. And so we are doing that here. And I'm going to ask Karima Gita now to trade me seats, please. And please explain more. Thank you.
in addition to Murshida Maria's beautiful words about the practice of zikr, I'm often very touched by Piero Murshid Hidayat's words on the practice of zikr. And these are excerpts from Sufi teachings. And he writes about the zikr that we're going to practice, which of course is the zikr of Hazrat Piero Murshid Inayat Khan. The word zikr means remembrance. Remembrance of the presence of God while losing oneself in the folds of a sacred experience. It is the remembrance of a divine presence which no expression could ever describe, but which becomes a reality to the extent that one is prepared to forget the self. The basic zikr practice involves the repetition of the ancient syllable La Elaha El Allahu, which means none exists save God. God alone is. Or as also Murshida Maria said, there is nothing. God is. God alone is. Piero Murshid Inayat Khan, who brought the Sufi message of spiritual liberty to the West in the early part of this century, has left us his own zikr as a most sacred heritage. Being a musician, it is natural that the zikr of Inayat Khan is a melodic, four-part singing zikr based on an Indian raga. In this zikr, the breath of the message of today can be felt as a new impulse arising in the ever-present consciousness. The secret of the magic radiance of this particular zikr resides in the mystical coordination of the raga with a constant rhythmic pattern. In accompaniment to sacred words offered as a humble invitation to the divine presence within the temple of the heart. The singing zikr of Inayat Khan also involves a rotation of the body from left to right, to be done in absolute harmony with the pattern of the rhythmically changed raga. The four parts of this singing zikr practice form a mystical journey from awareness of the self longing for the divine presence, to the loss of self in the realization of the divine presence. Zikr, the first part of the zikr, zikr one, is the love song. In zikr one, we are singing the phrase La Elaha El Allahu. Excuse me while I move forward. My seat's making a little noise, so I can move. My apologies for that. And as Murshida Nuria explained, there's a rotation from left to right, and then back to the left that is done in this zikr. And so we are singing, and you'll hear this melody in the music. La, 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 la. So we're bringing our chin and bowing our head to the heart on the L. Zikr too is the yearning call for the Divine Presence. And in Zikr too, we now sing just El Allah Hu. And using the same rotation, El Allah Hu, El Allah Hu, with the head and chin bowing to the heart on the Hu. The third part of the zikr is a tremendous feeling of happiness because the Divine Presence has answered the call and is becoming a reality in the depth of the heart. And in this zikr, we sing the phrase, Allahu, and the same rotation from left to right. Allahu, bowing the head to the heart on Hu, and feeling that vibration of Hu. God is. Allahu, God is. And in Zikr 4, the fourth part, we sing only that phrase, Hu, which means all is and nothing else is. When pronouncing the sound Hu, which is the basic tone of the universe, the all-pervading sound in space, the all-pervading light, Anur, one must try to come into that vibration. Each time we produce that sound, we are like the hammer on the gong, after which the sound produced goes on vibrating forever. Vibrating the atoms of the universe. While expressing the divine music of God's presence, inspired by the spirit of guidance, one's innermost wish might be to interpret the music harmoniously so that it resounds as beautifully as possible within one's heart as a sacred message of love, human and divine. And Piro Murshid shares, before practicing the singing zikr, Piro Murshid Inayat Khan strongly recommended that the mind should be prepared or conditioned by the external zikr. This is done by tracing a horizontal line from left to right. So we put our hands in this very gentle motion. The mudra to the fingers, placing the hand towards the left shoulder and also bowing our head and drawing a line and thinking of this also as a luminous line of light. We draw this line from left to right saying, this is not my body, and then bringing our head up and the hand, this is the temple of God, and drawing the hand into and towards, just below the heart center. So we will do this 11 times.
May I just also say that we have this picture that we, this picture hangs in the headquarters at The Hague, and Paramarshadhyayat was very generous to make sure that we could get a copy for restoration. And this picture, if you can't see it from where you are, at the end of the program, take some time to look at it, because this is a pit, and everything is so beautiful. Can you see it? Look at the delicate positioning of the hands on the knees, and the expression of light coming forth from the eyes, and the beautiful posture, and the way the folds in the gown, how elegant and beautiful. Murshid Anayat Khan's cousin, Murshid Ali Khan, saw this exquisite state that Murshid had entered during the zikr, and while Murshid was sitting there, called his name and got that glance in a photo. So we can also contemplate that kind of majesty and nobility and grace that is we see there in that moment, embodied as a reflection of the performance of zikr.
And before we begin, yes, we'll take an opportunity to become comfortable. Beginning the external zikr, this is not my body, this is the temple of God.